for the introduction to hear what Sri Vajrayana is preaching. Please hear it. Yeah, today we're having these two presentations from ALRC and Michael Sue, and we'll quickly go to the report that we have. Honourable members, we need to adopt the report before the end of the term. Hopefully our presentations won't be that much long today. But we are here with ALRC as of now. But before we get into the program such, Mr. Brown, are there any apologies?
Thank you, Chair. We have received apologies from Honourable Costa and Honourable Preston, as well as Costa being the Minister of Energy that she will go to share.
Oh, another apology that is there, Mr. Brown, is from Mr. Bundy, knowing this, the situation that it's in, that it only could become a virtual fantastic. Maybe before we even continue, I think this is for the first time that we meet the delegation from ELRC. And I know with the delegation again. Oh, another apology before I even continue, but maybe the chairperson of ELRC will come up with that apology, but it is such as that the CEO won't be with us, she's not well, but I know it's the apology that is still to come. So I'm saying, I know both sides, we need to know each other. Surely, on both sides, there are new faces, which we still need some introductions. Let me allow that to happen now. Honourable members, can you start introducing yourselves and our staff? Then I'll hand over to the department, DG. Do you take the same introduction from your side? I don't think so, but maybe for formality we'll do that. Then I'll hand over to the chairperson of the LRC after that to introduce himself and his team. Let me start by introducing myself. I'm Mabungelo Kina, the chairperson of this portfolio committee. Honourable members, can introduce you.
Good morning. My name is Desiree Senabal. Good morning, colleagues. Sonia Gosha.
Can I just ask you, Honourable Majesty? Can I just ask? Then one can tell me what they said. Yeah, you were a little bit fast. Yeah, both of you, please, can you? Because they want to know. Yeah,
pick up my Tuesday voice. Mondays on driving, that's why. My name is Desiree van der Walt. If she has her Tuesday voice, I have the Tuesday afternoon voice. Morning, colleague, Sonia Bosser.
Good morning. My name is Timothy Kosa.
Morning, Derek Mwood is my name.
Good morning. I'm Wana Makweke Reneiwe Mashalel. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Dulama Chalisa.
Thank you, sir. My name is Nokole Jimajeke. Thank you.
Thank you so much. DJ?
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Perry Triyashi, DBE.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Rufus Polia from the Department of Basic Education.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Suren Govender, Department of Basic Education.
Thank you, Sir. My name is Iwan Mahandali, Honourable Officer of the Directors of Policy.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Randall van den Heuvel, the PLO's Minister.
Thank you. Can I hand over to you, Chairperson of the
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and ladies and gentlemen. I'm Luvuyopo, one of the chairperson of the Education Labor Relations Council.
Thank you, Chair, and Honorable Members. Good morning. My name is Umphikhetsi Mavhura from ELRC.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. Good morning. My name is Lyle Muloisi from ELRC.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Member. My name is Matosa Moela from the ELRC. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Willy Kutumela. I'm from both the Department of Basic Education and also from the ELRC.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nelisiwe Bongo from the ELRC. Thank you.
Morning, Honorable Members. I'm Moses Novata. Thank you.
Morning, colleagues. My name is Dion Heron, representing the CT on XCOPRI RC. Thank you.
Chairperson, before I say the comment that I want to say, hopefully you know what I will say. Can you explain?
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, we'd like to tender the apology for the General Secretary. She is unfortunately unable to travel due to ill health. Thank you.
You know why I was not even going to the apology that General Secretary, Honorable Members. I'm interested in this delegation that I'm seeing in front of us today. I thought he will explain what is happening in LRC. I know the General Secretary is a female, yes, but looking at this delegation, really, it gives much to, you know. There's so much that you can say. That is why I said maybe before we even raise it, you must be having something to explain on what you are seeing in front of us today.
Well,
issues with the budget. No, can you explain
the question? Honorable Chair, members, as you would know, that one of the issues that were raised in the previous appearances of ours relates to the filling of vacancies. We are proud to say that our organogram is 99% populated, and with the fresh blood that we bring with us, which you will be seeing. Chair, I'm thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Let's hope really on the next meeting you won't be going there to this question.
Yes.
I wonder when are you finalizing the processes, but hopefully in the next meeting that we encounter with him, we'll be looking into seeing another picture of.
Yeah, we'll correct it.
Okay. Thank you so much. Honorable members, I'll then allow the DG first, then go to the ELRC. But ELRC, there's so much that we are interested to know as a portfolio committee. Yes, we are happy you are coming to us today. You have seen the labor peace in our country. There's been stability, of which you are going to be talking to us about it and say what is it that you have done, what is it that you are planning as we move ahead with what you are supposed to be doing. Again, we know that as we move forward, we are governed by some of the documents that we have adopted as a country. One of them is the NDP. Whenever, wherever we meet with the department, with the entities that we are working with, we want to know even how are they incorporating their work with PMDP as such, you know that LRC, you are part of the document. When we talk of labor cases, when we talk of the involvement of unions, definitely that is pointing at you. We need to know how are you saying you are going to reach some of the targets and the mandates that you are getting from the MDP. How are you expressing yourself even within the MTSF and moving forward, because those are the guiding lines that we have to say whatever we do, we know that you are being guided and that is what you want to see our country achieving. We're very much interested really even to know the issue of your status. I remember the last meeting we had with you, it was one of the biggest issues to say the status, you are not sure whether you are registering or what is happening. We are interested to know about all those things and then look at your plans to say yes or APP, what is it that you think you are going to do, understanding very well as a committee the issues that you always raise when it comes to the issue of targets, when it comes to the nature of your entity, and I know those are things, still things that you are still going to explain to us, but we are interested to know that with the funds that you are giving, what is it that you are doing, how are we benefiting as the education sector, how are we benefiting as a country, because we always say, no matter what, we have to make sure that we oversee and we are sure of the value for money for whatever money we pass in Parliament. So that is a chance that you will be giving them to talk to the committee, then allow the members of the committee to interact with you as we have done with that. DG, maybe before I hand over to the chairperson of LRC, you might be having some few words to say, then we'll hand over to the LRC to lead us in their presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think for the committee, we have three entities we basically see before the committee reporting on its plans as well as its strategic plans as well as its annual plans. And the Education Labour Relations Council is actually one of the oldest public service bargaining councils. And I think over the years, as a stakeholder, as the government, we work closely with our partners to ensure that it meets the standards that's expected in terms of governance and accountability. And I think when the chair goes through it, you'll see some of that coming out. But I think one of the things that will probably be different from other years is the status of the ELRC going forward and the fact that it will be delisted. And I think I'll leave that to the chairperson to elaborate on it. So with that, I think Chair will ask to take over.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The issues that we intend to cover relate to the overview of our strat plan, and we particularly deal with the ATP, which is the Annual Performance Plan, as well as the overview of the 2015-2016 budget and MTEF estimates. I will deal with the first part and will hand over to the CFO to deal with the APP as well as the budget. Honorable members would note that we are still sticking to the vision, the mission and the values of the organization. Having undergone the strat plan, we felt that we need to retain those and there is nothing to be changed in that regard. The one issue that relates to the legislative and policy mandate is an issue that the Honorable Chair has covered earlier, which relates to the delisting of the ELRC as an entity. We are currently waiting for a response from the Minister of Finance, but we have made that submission. And quite importantly in that regard is that the registrar of the Labour Relations, the Department of Labour, has written to us also indicating that we are not confirmed, we are not applying the prescripts of the bargaining councils. All the other bargaining councils operate in
terms of the Labour Relations Act, but we are operating in terms of the PFMA, and has actually threatened to deregister us, which would mean that our functions would then go back to the PSCBC. So we're trying to merge the two and trying to finalize the issue relating to the DVC. Insofar as the situational analysis is concerned, we'll deal with the performance delivery environment as well as our organizational and the environment, and I'll deal with that as the presentation unfolds. And I'll also cover the strategic outcome-oriented goals as well as the strategic objectives as per program. Just to touch on the situational analysis, the factors that influence our plans and activities, as you would know, we deal with dispute management services, which is your dispute resolution, as well as collective bargaining services. And quite important under dispute management services, the council is looking at the issue of legal representatives in our processes. You'd know that currently for misconduct in incapacity disputes, one must apply for legal representation. However, for all other disputes, legal representation is allowed. Now, council is currently reviewing its position in this relation because of the speed that is involved in concluding our matters where legal representatives are involved. Our experience has taught us that where legal representatives are involved, our cases tend to take much longer than normal. The other challenge that we're still getting around relates to the unavailability of children's courts. You'd know that some of the cases that we do involve children, an increase in sexual abuse and all those types of offences, which end up with educators facing disciplinary hearings and ultimately being dismissed or given action short of dismissal, and they come to us. And in those cases where children have to come and testify in those hearings, we provide special facilities for them. The Western Cape does have those facilities in some other provinces, but not everybody has, and we're still battling with those. But we've made quite a tremendous progress in ensuring that even other provinces are able to assist. In relation to collective bargaining services, as you would know, and we've been making the point in the previous meetings, the collective bargaining is driven by parties. So the issue of concluding collective agreements depends on parties. We play a facilitatory role. We bring parties together, we ensure that they get to an agreement as quickly as possible. However, the really signing those collective agreements depends entirely on them. And just to go back to the issue of the delisting, the ELRC, in the context of the Labour Relations Act, is a bargaining council in the public education sector. We are a sectoral bargaining council which falls under the broad umbrella of the PSCBC. The PSCBC has got four sectoral councils: your general, your safety and security, your public health and social development, and we service education. Now, Section 28 of the Labour Relations Act sets out the powers and functions of bargaining councils, and there's a clash between what we've been required to do in terms of being a state entity and what the Labour Relations Act requires. The ELRC is currently listed as a Schedule 3A public entity in terms of the PFMA, and Section 1 of the PFMA defines the role of a public entity as well as its sources. And as I indicated, the ELRC does not meet the definition as identified in Section 1 of the PFMA. The provisions of the Labour Relations Act, which is the primary legislation that is applicable to the ELRC, are in conflict with the provisions of the PFMA. In this case, the PFMA becomes our secondary legislation, and this is what has been creating problems. Now, if one looks at the Section 210 of the Labour Relations Act, it provides that if any conflict relating to the matters dealt with in this Act arises between the Act and the provisions of any other law, save the Constitution, that the Labour Relations, the provisions of the Labour Relations Act will prevail. And this has been the challenge that we've been facing, which has now led to the Registrar of Labour Relations threatening us with deregistration. But coming back to our business, the focus areas of council, and I want to start off with the dispute management services, as you know, we deal firstly with dispute prevention. And this we do through a number of trainings which we will report on, which we've done, both on practitioners. When I say practitioners, I deal particularly with the parties at the ALRC, so that would be labor and the employer, and dispute prevention committees which we have established. We have also undertaken a number of facilitations and interventions. You would know we've done interventions in many provinces where either there's a potential of some form of unrest taking place, and we train parties and dispute resolution practitioners on grievance handling and disciplinary process. We see this as a proactive role. Rather, people know exactly what the law provides in relation to dispute resolution, and that assists them in terms of what they need to do in practice. And lastly, it's dispute resolution, which is a special training for panelists on resolving disputes where the child is a victim. I've already, you know, touched on this issue and plan to reduce disputes on appointments and promotion. We also train panelists, and the reason why we do that is because, as you would know, the law is forever changing, and both the panelists without the practitioners need to be kept abreast of the law. And the collective bargaining services, you would know that we're dealing with issues around incentives for educators, and I think we've reported this in the previous sitting. We also deal with training and advocacy of the revised PEM. I'm proud to say that the revised PEM has been accepted at the ELRC and is due for publication. Also in the training and advocacy on revised performance management, which is QMS, for institution-based educators and EMS for office-based educators. We also deal with the revision of council's constitution in line with the Labour Court judgment and amendments to the Labour Relations Act. The CCNA has also recently published its revised rules, which will come into effect from the 1st of April, and we're in the process of completing our own dispute resolution rules, which should be finalized in the next coming few months. The administration services, firstly, I just need to deal with the review of the funding model to address the static flow of income. As you know, we operate based on levies which are paid by the parties. We also have the project that we are involved with, which relates to the building refurbishment project, which is costing the council quite a bit. We also invest in human capital, the recruitment and retention of staff. As I indicated right at the outset of this session, that part of the issues that were raised when we were here were vacancies in the organogram, which we have now filled. Lastly, the introduction of an integral planning system to improve the business of the council, and that relates to the ERP, which is the Enterprise Resource Planning System. In relation to the strategic outcome-orientated goals of the ELRC, the following are the strategic outcomes. One is to engage in research and monitoring and evaluation of activities to provide an evidence base for improved policies and policy implementation of basic education. We provide a proactive dispute prevention and dispute resolution services. I've already elaborated on this. Over the past couple of years, we've paid special attention to proactive dispute resolution, and it's yielding results in terms of the number of disputes that get referred to us. We maximize the scope of the party's shared interests and provide appropriate support and training for all involved in dispute resolution and collective bargaining. We provide appropriate support and training to all involved in dispute resolution and collective bargaining. And lastly, we implementing a sound communication strategy which supports and complements the core activities of council. You'd note that the functionality of council has improved with collective agreement on a number of issues that were outstanding being completed. And lastly, we strengthen our social dialogue through supporting and participating in education activities such as QLTC and the NECT. The CFO, when dealing with the ATP, will deal more fully with the strategic objectives, the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I will be taking you through the annual performance plan for the financial year 2015-16 and also the budget for 2016, the budget overview for 2015-16 and the MTF estimates. And we will conclude with some of the HR matters that the Chairperson has already alluded to. Our annual strategic, our annual performance plan, together with the budget, was developed by the management of the ELRC under the guidance of the accounting authority in our ESCO. We have aligned our annual performance plan, our APP has been aligned to the strategic plan, stretching from 2015-16 to 2019-20. We accurately reflect the performance targets which the ELRC will endeavor to achieve in the next financial year. We will also be looking at contributing towards the outcome number one, which is improving the quality of education in our country. We will also, in achieving this within the mandate of the Council and its constitution, as stated in its constitution, Council is confident that that its new strategic vision and annual performance plan will improve the services in the next coming financial year. And to some of the matters that influence our annual performance plan relates to the revision of the legislation and the other mandates. In this case, we refer to the amendment of the FETC Act 16 of 2006. Which by its proclamation will require that the Council revisit its scope going forward. We also refer to the APP has also been influenced by the delisting process that the Chairperson has already spoken to, delisting from a Schedule 3A public entity, which the ELRC is. The annual performance plan has been distributed with the three programs that the Chairperson spoke to when he spoke to the strategic plan, which is the administration services being a program number one, the dispute management services and collective bargaining. And I will be dealing with the purpose and the actual targets of each of the programs. We start with the administration services, which endeavors to provide support services to the core functions of the council, ensuring that it delivers an efficient and effective service on its mandate. To achieve this, the administration services has been categorized in financial administration, compliance and risk and audit, mobilization of employee services, and communication, and we will deal with each of those items. When it comes to compliance and communication, compliance and finance, our objective is to instill physical discipline, sound corporate governance, and compliance with the regulatory framework. And in doing so, as the Chairperson has already spoken to, we are intending to implement an ERP system in the next financial year. We endeavor to continue to maintain an unqualified clean audit opinion. going forward, and 100% of the internal audit plans will be achieved in the next coming financial year. We've also, starting from this financial year that is ending in this month, endeavor to introduce risk management in the organization. This is to add value through assisting the organization to meet overall corporate objectives by establishing a systematic and disciplined approach to assessing, evaluating, improving the quality and efficiency of risk management processes, internal controls, and corporate governance processes. To this, we have targeted to ensure that we have an updated and up-to-date risk register that will be approved and monitored by the audit committee of the council. The compliance register will also be updated to ensure that, which is also being monitored by the accounting officer, but also by the audit committee. In relation to human capital, our endeavor is to professionalize the ELRC by investing in our human capital. And for this, we target to make sure that 30 employees in our organization will participate in development programs that match the objectives of the organization. Four employee wellness programs will be taken in the next financial year, and we intend to fill all the vacancies within the 3 months of request. The last part under administration will be the corporate image of the council. This we intend to do to promote the image of the council, but also to promote awareness of the council's activities to the society and the education sector at large. And to this, we endeavor to come to conduct four advertising campaigns and awareness campaigns through media such as magazines, radios, and so forth. We then move to program two, which is dispute management services. And the purpose of this program is to manage the dispute proactively, as the chairperson has already alluded to. This we will achieve through dispute prevention processes, efficiencies in special disputes. This relates to cases where children are involved, like the chairperson has alluded to, training and development and professional development. Dispute management services has got four objectives, strategic objectives, which they intend to achieve. This is providing efficiency in resolving disputes, to ensure quality of arbitration awards, to provide training to dispute resolution practitioners and negotiators, and also to provide professional development to our panelists. To this end, the first one, which is the efficiency of dispute resolution services, we endeavor to schedule cases that are within jurisdiction for consideration within 30 days after we've received those cases. We also intend to schedule cases for arbitration within 45 days after conciliation. In terms of quality control, our quality control is done in all arbitration awards concluded during the financial year. So when there is an arbitration that is done, it will be subjected to quality control. Training and development, we intend to facilitate 6 training sessions conducted for dispute resolution practitioners and negotiators. For professional development, again, our intention is to hold or conduct 4 training sessions in the next coming financial year for all our panelists. Chairperson, we then move to collective bargaining. The purpose of the program collective bargaining is to contribute to the council's vision of strengthening social contract between government, teacher unions, civil society that helps to create a conducive environment for improved quality of teaching and learning. Such is done by promoting collective bargaining at national and provincial level, as well as to ensure the development of the effective policies for quality public education in a non-disruptive environment for teaching and learning. To this end, we have three strategic objectives, which is to facilitate bargaining on identified matters of mutual interest in public education, to administer research on identified issues for research on evidence-based teacher welfare and national development. We also strive to facilitate district prevention support services through providing effective administrative functions for short stewards. Our target in relation to facilitating bargaining is scheduling bargaining and governance meetings within 14 days from the date of agreement. So as soon as the parties have agreed, we will do so within 14 days. We will issue notices to the parties on the day that we schedule the meetings, which is 14 days prior to the meeting. Annually table the management plans for approval for the next bargaining cycles. In terms of the research services, our target is to administer and resources allocated for approved research programs by the council. For dispute prevention support, we intend convening a task team meeting on a monthly basis to address the dispute prevention. Chairperson, we will then move to the budget that also deals with the MTF estimates for the next coming financial pre-financial period. I think what we need to highlight on this slide here is that, as the chairperson has already alluded to, you will realize that our income in the next MTF remains static because currently we have a collective agreement on levies which governs how much income we receive. We are of course assisted by the fact that we have reserves which contribute in terms of interest towards the council, and we anticipate that that interest will increase going forward. Perhaps just to take the committee through to the bottom of this slide, which is the capital expenditure line in the bottom of the slide, you will also realize that we have allocated in the previous financial year, this financial year, an amount to the tune of 9 million in the 2014-15 financial year and 17.6 million in the 2015-16 financial year. This relates to the matter that the chairperson referred to earlier on, which is the refurbishment of our own buildings at the ELRC. To give an overview of how our expenditure is structured in the organization, we realize that almost 68% of our expenditure relates to the core business, which is dispute resolution and collective bargaining, while the rest is allocated to administration services. The core business, dispute management services and collective bargaining, as I already said, takes about 68% of the total budget. We have an approved budget of 2015-16, which is 90 million including capital expenditure. This is an increase of 29% from 2014-15, but again, this is as a result of the refurbishment of the building. The increase in the budget relates to the capital expenditure, which we have spoken to, our own building that we are currently refurbishing. The funding of the council's strategic outcome-oriented goals has not been compromised with this budget, and the expenditure of the ELRC is closely aligned to the income generated. The funding model is unique and challenging, as the chairperson has already mentioned at the beginning of this presentation. However, we do have accumulated surplus funds. These accumulated reserves are adequate to carry us over the MTF period. Revenue has increased by an average of 53% over the MTF period, excluding the transfers from the transformation funds and accumulated reserves. This increase largely relates to the interest from the reserves that we have. temperature increases at an average of 9% over the MTF period, mainly due to increasing the budget for expenditure relating to research, training and development, and also an adjustment in terms of the CPI effect on the operational expenditures. A significant increase of the 15.3 million in the financial year relates to the refurbishment of the building. The council projects that the deficit will increase over the MTF period due to the income remaining constant or static. However, we believe that we have sufficient reserves to be able to carry over the deficit in the short term. The projected deficit, however, is not sustainable in the long term, and it is anticipated that the levies will be revised by the council to cover the deficit in the long term. Lastly, Chairperson, perhaps it's just to highlight HR matters that the Chairperson is related to, which was raised in the committee previously, where we have projected our organogram, and as the Chairperson has mentioned at the beginning, we have filled all the positions 99%, and we expect that we would have reached 100% in the first quarter of the next financial year. Chairperson, the Council appreciates the oversight role played by the Portfolio Committee, which ensures accountability for the utilization of the limited resources employed to fulfill the strategic goals of the Council, which ultimately serves the public education sector. The Council's annual performance plan for 2015-16 financial year outlines the revitalized chart, which will define an attainable goals of achieving our objectives and maintain labor peace in the public sector to improve the quality of education in public schools. I thank you.
Thank you so much for the presentation. Honorable members, can I open up to you if you want to interact with the presentation that you have just given? Can I note Honorable Lagmo, Honorable Ngoni, Honorable Mashabelu, Honorable Khoza, Honorable Fandapat, in that order, please.
Working. Thank you, Luella. The DBE revision, when we had a presentation recently on the DBE performance, one of which presentations, I think it was the annual performance plan, Mr. Pagano indicated that the PPN was not, revision of the PPN was not being looked at currently. What was being looked at was the implementation of the existing PPN. So I'm interested to know what you are referring to when you're talking about the revision of the PPN. You also spoke about the revision of PAM. Now, I see there's something on your website which I'm unable to download, but is there a revised PAM document that is available? Why don't you just talk about the consultation that went through, the facts, a little bit about the revisions that have taken place? I'm from Eastern Cape, and what I have discovered through my constituency visits is that an agreement has been reached, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this is my understanding of it, an agreement has been reached through the ELRC, through the provincial, what do you call it, chamber, with the unions, with all the excess teachers that, that there are in the Eastern Cape, to take those excess teachers in posts at schools to teach, and teach in inverted commas, to teach an African language at schools where African language posts previously didn't exist. The result is that Afrikaans schools, for instance, now have an African language teacher who doesn't have a curriculum. In some cases, the teacher hasn't even pitched up, they've been allocated to the school. But they have lost a teacher that was previously part of their post basket. I'm told that there's nothing we can do about it. This is a an agreement that was reached with the excess teacher between the unions, predominantly SATU, of course, and the ELRC, the provincial chamber. Please can you talk about that? I don't understand how it will in any way contribute to achieving goal number one, the quality education of the children that you, you are talking about, because schools are not sitting with outposts that they need, and they're sitting with somebody who is not teaching anything. I'm interested in whether you are involved at all in the talks, the consultation that's taking place about the DPE's proposed 1+4 plan, and if you are, then if you could give us some information on that. And then I think lastly, Chair, the QMS, Quality Management System, is it possible to give us any indication of when that you hope will be finalised? It's been going on for many years now, as you well know. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm also equally concerned, Chairperson. Where there are men, there should be a first part to start a song. Hopefully we are going to see the first part in the near future as they are indicating the positions are still there.
No, Mr. Mbun, I think that one is not properly put. We are not looking for the first part, not at all.
Not the first part, ma'am.
No. It can't be put like that.
We need women to be part, to balance.
And that's so, why I say we are fighting for gender equality. Not first part.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask, there are these targets that have been put in, most pleasures in the admin. They say quarterly, annually, 30 employees are going to be, it is their target. But is it not possible for them to put us, sorry, the annual target, it's not possible that on the APT they put how much or how many will be employed per quarter, so that when we do our oversight, we know exactly. Equally so on the training, trainings per year. And also, I still believe that there are disputes that are coming from the 2013-2014 that jumped to 2015-16. Are we having targets for them? And can they be put or placed in terms of the quarterly basis? I have also noted the issue of levies that might be increased in the long term in the presentation. Is there any possibility of indicating to us plus or minus how much may the increase to be? On the issue of ICMS, I think the one honorable member has touched that one, the progress made so far on ICMS and QMS.
And also, I would like to add on the issue of the progress made, Chairperson, on the issue of the incentives of teachers. That is, the negotiations that are still going on now. Is there any progress made? Then, is there any indication of permanence of the temporary educators? Because we have a lot of temporary educators that are still temporary. Is there any indication that can be made to us how far those teachers can be made permanent? And in provinces, Chairperson, there are these moratoriums, we always understand that there are moratoriums that have been put in place for employment of these senior posts, like directors and so forth, more especially around Mpumalanga and like. Is there anything that they know about on those issues? Then the issue of how long does it take for a person to be taken back to employment, more especially the principal? If the principal was a bit suspended or taken out of the school, and then for him to go back after every process has been done and the teacher principal was found or was not found guilty or was found guilty and was just meant to pay, not to be taken out of the school. How long does it take for the principal to go back to it? I don't know what you're saying about, but I think you are just cutting me. Should I leave those questions? There are just one or two questions as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Unfortunately, I'm caught here, man. I was having three questions, but two questions I've already asked. So my third question is this. SATU is the biggest contributor to disputes relating to appointments and promotions of teachers in schools. They insist that their members should occupy this post at all costs, regardless of consideration for merit. Members of other unions are sidelined due to the filling of this post. Unfortunately, this also has negative consequences on the education system of our country. And then what steps do you have the Department of Education in place to make sure that SATU does not interfere with the appointments of teachers, and that such appointments must be made on merit? If such plan does not exist, why not? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mashabel. Though, Honorable Members, I would love us to raise questions that are founded. I'm not saying, Honorable Mashabel, what you are raising is not founded. But I wish when they explain, they respond to that, give us the basis of what is happening. But let me leave it to them when they respond, because I don't remember being covered that it's fine as long as we have the proof of what we are saying, it's fine. I'll give them a chance to respond to that. Honorable Khoza.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Some of the questions are taken, but I'm interested in knowing as to what causes the cases to take longer. Is it the question of capacity or anything else? In the process of labor peace, which is part of your core responsibility as ELC, are you seeing yourself playing a meaningful role in terms of that one? Thank you.
Are we finding that?
Chief, thank you. May I first comment that it would have been easier if we had a complete budget document and not just, you know, this one page 16 thing, because I'm now comparing it to the budget vote of the department and I'm trying to get your figures for exactly, if you look at that expenditure slide 33 that you have, where you say your collective bargaining services 32%, dispute management services 20%, admin is 32% and dispute prevention support services 16%. Can you tell us exactly what is your salary cost to the ELRC and what percentage of your budget your staff component is, the complete packages? Chair, the other thing is I'm also battling on our APP. I see the ELRC has got on the current annual budget, it has 67.795 million. You speak about 90 million, etc. etc. I'm trying, I just thought that if you come with a budget presentation, we would get your complete budget. But we don't have to cross to all other documents. But nevertheless, I noticed that you also have cases, and you estimate that those cases, which you refer to as a number of jurisdictional cases registered per year, and that's in the budget of the department under ERRC, that in the past years you had 2012-13 went up with 111 cases. Now, in the current and projections up until 2017-18, Chair, the number remains the same. I put it to you that you already said that your deficit is going to increase, yet you plan to have exactly the same number of jurisdictional cases. It's not going to stay the same. It should come down if you do so much empowering and research and human investment training and blah, blah, blah. The issue I have is that, and please don't get me wrong, I understand the value of buildings, but sitting in an education portfolio committee where we sometimes have schools without classrooms doing extremely well, although the conditions ain't good at all, how on earth, if you prepare for your deficit to increase, you spend money on a building upgrading, refurbishment, whatever you want to call it, of 15 million rand. I just don't see it. And I see that entities of the education departments must set the example. You don't have to have an ultra-modern great building. It really conflicts and it actually upsets me tremendously as I'm visiting schools across the country at the moment. And I see these grand buildings while learners are not. So, you know, on the one hand, Chair, we're providing for buildings and what we all sit in with air cons and learners don't have. And so there is the balance, it's not correct. How on earth are we spending so much money on this compared to? And then you plan for a deficit to increase, but you don't accommodate it in your budget properly. And I'd really like to urge that we get a absolute, not just the one from education in the budget vote, that we actually go and analyse our budget before we come and present it to this committee. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning. Chairperson, I wanted to raise a few questions with regard to the presentation. In terms of my own expectation, maybe the committee's expectation as well, I think that one of the core responsibilities of ELRC is to ensure that there is labor market peace. And I think I must really appreciate the fact that in the past few years, if you compare the situation with now, there has been a lot of milestones in terms of stability. That has to be appreciated. But the question that arises is how are you going to maintain that thing? That peace in the labor market. And I'm raising this in view of the resolutions that have been taken at different levels within government and in the political sector. When government engages unions,
the emphasis has been to ensure that we avoid violent strikes, which also characterized by poor or low wages and violence in general. So, because we have noted that most of the time the bargaining takes a period of 5 years, and I think it might be, of course, a fact that we were in the middle of the 5 year period, and that stability was triggered by that. But now, as it comes to the end, how do we plan to deal with it? And I think that should have appeared or been reflected in the strat plan. To just point out to us, these are the things that we are going to do. Because in the previous portfolio committee meeting, we have said that there should be intergovernmental interrelations between ELRC and other role players. And we don't see even yet, and I think in the chapter they agreed, the leadership of ELRC agreed in that meeting that that thing is going to be taken care of at a political level and even at administrative level, but we don't see it being reflected. And then we talk about your budget, the bulk of your budget going towards dispute resolution and bargaining. And you don't really give us the exact actions that you are going to take to make sure that it is realized, because we think that if that thing is not properly reflected, as a committee, it's going to be difficult for us to hold you accountable for that. And I think it's also important, I would suppose that you already know what are the trigger points. And if you conduct the workshop, training workshops, we must know that what workshops are going to be held and at which day, so that if at all the chairperson or parliament decides that there should be oversight, the committee must go and also observe or take part, it should happen. But it's not their chairperson. The other point that I wanted to raise, Chair, is the issue of the when the strat plan was being crafted, did the ELRC take into confidence the department? Did you work together with the department to ensure that issues are properly realigned? Because it's my view that as an entity of the department is the one that gives direction as to how we should carry out your mandate. To what extent have you done that? And maybe you can show us where you have considered the views and the inputs of the department. The other point that I have identified is on the budget. It's a bit difficult to go through the document, Chairperson, because I don't know which format is this one. Maybe it's a new format of writing the budget and so forth. But I think it's very confusing for us, because once in a while you see a column or a table that running on its own, it's like a lost column, lost table, and you can't really link the two amounts that are being spoken of. There was also an issue of the building. I thought we also agreed as a portfolio committee that the last time that we got a report on the building, that the building is going to be optioned, that was going to be the last report that we get from ELRC on the building. We don't want to hear about the building anymore. We just want you to proceed with other issues and not continue to talk about the building, because it seems as if the building has sort of preoccupied our
our mind to the extent that it's also even taking up the resources that we should be using for other tasks. So maybe, Chairperson, if we can get clarity as to why are we still laboring on the issue of the building in 2015-2016 budget. Thank you.
Thank you so much, honorable members, for those questions. Chair, I will then hand over to you, but before I do that, what is the status of your bargaining concerns now in all the provinces? You know, it has been one of the things that has been challenged on. What is the difference saying around the status of the councils in all the provinces? You mentioned one of the very important things, these children courts and the development in various provinces. Yes, I'm not sure whether I was not paying much attention. You mentioned of the Western Cape where these facilities are there, and you said some other provinces. Give us a picture so that you understand what is happening in the country, which other provinces are having that, and then so that it's easier even for us to make follow-ups as to say why, what is the problem with others, and where is the issue when it comes to that. You also talked of the incentives for educators. Yes, it's good. It has been raised, and one of the questions is to say what is it, what you are discussing, how far are we? But for me, I don't want us to focus when it comes to the issues of the system, the improvements in the system, only on incentives. I think in your meetings, even with the labor unions, there are so many other arguments that you have around the issues of system improvements. What is it that you can tell us about such things so that we understand? I'm very much interested again, Chairperson and the delegation, on the research programs that we have. It's one of the things that you always encourage even as a committee, but can you share with us some of these research and monitoring and evaluation activities that you always provide, this evidence that you always provide, and maybe even in future, I know there are some of the documents that are yours as the entity, but it would be quite a good thing that you share some of these papers that you have as you continue to research on various issues when it comes to LRC. Lastly, for now, on my side, you support QLCC, you support NECT. What can you say about mostly QLCC and the support that you are giving? We are strengthening that social dialogue. Are you seeing any impact when it comes to that? What is it that you can say in your plans you are planning to do better than what you already have? What are your plans to change even the things more when it comes to the new financial year that you are getting, your targets, your plans moving forward when it comes to that? I know members will be coming with another round. Let me allow you for now to engage and respond.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, honorable members. I think, Chair, let's start with the question that was raised around the transfers and the fact that they are increasing over the MTF period. I think as we have already alluded to in the presentation, Chair, that our income has remained static over the period, and as such, we tend to supplement our budget with the accumulated surpluses that already we have. We therefore, you will realize therefore that over the MTF period, we transfer funds from our accumulated surplus account into the budget in order to sustain the expenditure that we incur over the MTF period. And that's really where this transfer relates to. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Let me start with the first question, and then I'll go through the list. The first question that was asked was, how does the issue get to us?
And subsequent to that, there was another question which related to collective bargaining. So I'm going to answer the two. As indicated, we've got the dispute management services. So what happens, if there's an issue around an educator who has been disciplined, or an educator applied for a post but did not receive it, which is your dismissal and your ULP, if let's say someone was disciplined for misconduct or incapacity, the department then gave that person a sanction, could be a dismissal or a final return warning or anything or a fine, the person is unhappy, then that person refers a dispute to the ELRC. The ELRC then conciliates the dispute, looks at whether that sanction that was given was procedurally fair, that means your pre-hearing procedures were followed, and was it substantively fair, was there a valid reason there, then they would decide on the fairness of such. So that's the dispute management services. Having mentioned that, what we've done, and which I highlighted in my presentation, is that we train parties so that they know the standard that's expected of them and what the implications are, and the whole process of discipline. And that we do as part of dispute prevention. It has yielded a lot of results because the disputes that are coming in are now lesser than what you know we used to have. So that's the one part. The other part is the collective bargaining services. What happens in collective bargaining services is that either one of the parties, whether it's labor, and labor is made up of CTU, ATU, or SATU, and the department as the employer, they would just raise an issue which is called a matter of mutual interest. So let's say they have an issue that they want to raise, they want to change the conditions of employment of the educators. So they would discuss that, they would table it at the ELRC to say, we want to negotiate on this particular aspect. So they would then start their negotiation. We facilitate the process and help them meet each other halfway so that they can then finalize the issue. We would ensure as part of the collective agreement that it's legal, that whatever is concluded is within the legal parameters, both policy and law. So that's how an issue comes. That's how an issue comes to us. Just on the issue of the PAM, there is a revised PAM. It's been consulted on. It's finalized. It's now sitting with the legal services department of the DBE. So the consultation is finished, and there's agreement on it. So the parties are happy. It's going to be published. But I would understand that part of the issues that the department would deal with is, the financial impact that, it has and all other factors. But from the ELRC's point of view, if you take note of the process that I explained before, it was tabled, it was discussed, it's been dispensed of. The issue of the PPN, has also been raised. It has been tabled. It's an issue that currently under discussion. What I can appraise this committee on is that there is a decision to relook the PPN as it stands currently. The modalities are what parties are still engaged in. I'm not sure you raised an issue, Honourable Member, in relation to a collective agreement that's been concluded in a particular province. I'm not sure whether you are referring to the Eastern Cape. If you are referring to the Eastern, fortunately, it's a process that I was facilitating. If the issue relates to the Eastern Cape, what had happened in the Eastern Cape is that there were collective agreements that were concluded pre this one. One is the 2008 and another one is the 2012, which secured certain educators who are in excess. Now, what we did then in 2014 was to then prioritize them. They are not given to teach on skills that they don't have. So there's what is called matching, where on that list of excess, the schools, what has actually happened is that districts forwarded a number of vacancies to say, we have vacancies in Xhosa, in Afrikaans, in life orientation, and all those things. So what the department would do, the department would then look on the educators in excess to say whether there's somebody who has the skills that are required by a particular school. And that process, you know, was done. The issue was what then happens to the people who, you know, couldn't be placed. And where the ELRC left the process was that the parties were to consider issues of reskilling of the current educators to see whether they could be trained on other aspects where they could be utilized in. And the challenge is that you will always have some of the educators in excess purely because you find that you might have a lot of them who can teach Xhosa in English, but might have a few who are able to teach mathematics. I'm making an example. So you have a high demand of mathematics and a low supply of those educators who then teach mathematics. In relation to the 1+4, the 1+4 has been dispensed of last week at the ELRC. The employers, the Department of Labor, completed its consultation process. There is an agreement. That agreement enjoys majority, although not a 100% agreement, but it enjoys majority agreement. In relation to the disputes, the 13 and 14, which have spilled over to the current financial year, the manager in dispute resolution has confirmed that those disputes are not more than 10. The challenge is that with some disputes, we become more stricter on the life of a dispute. We try and complete it within a particular period. You'd know that generally, where you deal with promotions, and these are provisions in terms of the labor relations, like we have 90 days to refer it. In the ELRC constitution, we've cut the 90 days to 30 days by parties agreement, which means that if you are aggrieved about initial relating to promotion, you only have 30 days to refer it. We have to conciliate that dispute within 30 days, and those are the provisions of Section 135(3) of the Labor Relations Act. And once it's been conciliated, then it would then be arbitrated. So we give parties another 30 days to refer. So if you're looking at the entire life of a dispute, we complete most of them within 90 to 120 days. We try and keep to it. Unfortunately, some of them you'll find that they are postponements, either one party doesn't rock up or the witnesses are not there. So there are those eventualities which we try and plan for, but they still overlap. In relation to the issue of the levy, it's very difficult to say how much. But the issue is that it's a negotiated, you know, agreement. So there would be parties not engaged. The issue has just been tabled. Parties will engage in the next couple of meetings coming. But currently there's no engagement. So there's no figure at hand. The issue of labor peace, we haven't had any unrest. In education. We're trying our level best, and that's why as the ELRC, when we hear that there's an issue, we go and intervene. We've intervened in many problems. We've intervened in KZN. I have personally intervened in the Eastern Cape. So where there are issues that arise, before they erupt, so we go there, we listen to parties, and we assist in facilitating those issues. The issue of the building, the issue of the building, I must confess, I'm not sure at what point it was agreed that we wouldn't talk about the building. The issue of the building refurbishment has always been on the table. We waited for the concurrence of the minister that was agreed, and the process, is unfolding. It's not a priority. For lack of a better word, it's not really a priority issue. It's not an issue that, but I would take it that, people would be aware that amongst other things, the building that we are in was leaking. Whenever it rained, we couldn't function. In the past, computers have been damaged. So we've had all sorts of problems, and unfortunately, we've had to deal with those issues.
what can you tell us about the project? How far are we with
the process?
So we understand, we know exactly where we are coming from. We know the challenges we have been coming here to us. Now what I think we need to be interested to as a committee. How far are we with the refurbishment of the building? When are we? Are we seeing, are we expecting the project to come to an end?
Sure. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The CFO does 5 visits, so I'm going to ask him, once I'm done with the issues, to just, at the end, deal with the progress on the and the building refurbishment. But what I know is that the contractor has indicated that we are ahead of time and the building refurbishment should be completed quite soon. But I'll allow the CFO to deal with the issue. On the issue of the status of the bargaining councils, in particular the provincial chamber, just to explain the process, the national ELRC deals with issues that are of national interest, and provinces deal with issues that are peculiar to that province. So the same process would unfold. In the provincial chamber, an item would be tabled for negotiations, but it would be an item that is peculiar, and the Constitution uses the word peculiar to that province. And it would be discussed and concluded in a collective agreement signed, and it would only be applicable to that province. That, however, before the province then implements the collective agreement, it sends to the National Office of the ELRC where it is looked at. And where there are concerns, that collective agreement or draft collective agreement is sent for legal opinion. And once the legal opinion clears it, then it would be cleared. We've had a number of them that, although parties have agreed in the province, but when it's sent to national then does not consent to it and you know, it's taken off. So we're quite comfortable that what is being done in provinces is adequate, and it deals with issues that are peculiar to the province. Where we have a concern as national, we would then not pass that particular collective agreement. And the last issue on children's costs, we have just confirmed with the department as well as the manager for collective bargaining. We have been in discussion. The ELRC has been in discussions with the Department of Social Development, as well as the magistrates' courts, to provide us with facilities. For facilities that are conducive for children testifying. You know that the mesh court has children's court. So we have made headway in a number of provinces. We unfortunately can't confirm which ones. As I indicated, I know for a fact that in Mpumalanga and in the Western Cape, where those were quite ahead of time, you know, those facilities have been there, but we have been in negotiations with the different magistrates' courts in the different, you know, provinces to deal with the issue. The issue on SADC interfering with appointments, we certainly have no knowledge as the ELRC of that. Remember, if you again follow the process that I explained, the process is that once an educator is aggrieved by not being appointed, they would then refer the dispute to us. And what we look at is whether it was unreasonable and unfair for that educator not to be appointed. That's the one. And secondly, whether the provisions of the PEM, including Resolution 5 of 1998, which provides the process of appointment, has been followed. And we would then make an award on whether it was fair or unfair. So that's what we, you know, we deal with. And it's a variety of reasons. Most reasons that we've been faced with are reasons relating to, you know, to the process, and those relate to SGPs in terms of how the panel was constituted, you know, and certainly all those things. There might have been issues where, you know, bias in relation to a particular union is raised. But certainly, in those cases, then you would have had an award that then deals with that particular issue. But it doesn't come as an issue to the ELRC. It comes via a particular dispute, which is conciliated and arbitrated. future?
You should be having, as I said, we haven't touched the issue of QMS. Where are we? How far are we when it comes to the issue that has been raised? Quite sharply by
Moonlight.
Okay. The issue of your research capacity, what is it that you are doing? What else am I looking on? But yeah, more especially the issue of QMS and IQMS. What is happening? Oh, and the issue of incentives and all this, the improvements within the system, because, yeah, if you can refer to me very broadly, other than just the teacher incentives.
Thank you. For the issue of IQMS, Chair, and IQMS, the decision has been made. Council has agreed, the consultation process was completed, we have a document. It is in the process of being signed by all the parties. But the decision has been made.
Can I get in the chairperson?
Yes.
I think we last saw LRC as a committee. When was it last? Which was last? Oh, I forget. I'm not sure. Maybe you can remind me. But I'm talking, it's a matter of months now.
Yes.
We last met within LRC. The same response was given as to say we're in the process of signing. I don't think signing can take more than 6 months, Chairperson. Take us into confidence what is happening, because really with that one I just cannot take it. It's almost a year now with us, so you were in the process of, the agreement was reached, which was on the process of signing. It can't be, it cannot take more than 4 months, the process of signing. So as reports as well, we're closer to a year. What is happening?
Chairperson, I'd have to just take final confirmation on how far the process is. I know, as Chairperson of Council, that the decision was made, the collective agreement was finalized, it was just being circulated for signing. I would just need to confirm with the manager collective bargaining on how far that process is. That was the latest that I was given. So in the next round, I will come back to the issue. Yes, today. The issue of research, Chairperson, I know the issue was discussed at the ELRC. There is a task team that's been set up to consider whether, you know, how do we increase our research capacity, whether a researcher should be employed to assist us, or whether we look at a service provider on a need. On a needs basis. We're currently dealing with issues around ECD, which are a priority in terms of research, and I know that the task team in the last meeting, which would have been last week, gave a report where, in respect of that particular issue, they are looking at appointing a service provider to assist with that particular research. The other issue that we've had to consider is around the finances, you know, on how we approach the whole research issue. And currently, as I have indicated, we're doing it on a needs basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Honourable members, are there any follow-up questions? I see the hand for Honourable Sandoval. Honourable Majeke, quickly so now, please, because we have to go to Mali. Honourable Fandervaart, Honourable Macheke, Honourable Longmore. Yeah, in that order.
Chi, if I may just ask one question. The previous, the presentation was closed off with the following words. We try to improve the quality of education in public schools. Please tell me how do you monitor this? What is your outcomes? Based on what? What is your successes to improve quality education in public schools? Remembering that this committee does oversight, read many reports, and know actually what is happening on quality of education. So please give me a correct answer or a genuine answer on that. And Jay, I've got many questions, but I'll park them. So I want to make, not being rude, but I actually when you present it, I have this in my picture. People come to you, then you go somewhere or divert or whatever. So it seems to me sort of a middleman. Am I right? But if I am, I don't actually see the need for ELRC. Because God has taken things, do something with it and get results. And better, if that is how you close your presentation. But really, you know, the way it's changed person, we get answers about a building. There are many buildings that you can get. You don't have to spend 15 million on a refurbishment. That's the point. Doesn't mean if I get a million, I must spend a million if I can get something for 800,000. That's the point.
Thank you, Chair. More or less the same question, but what exact? Since the ERFC is an entity that is there to help improve the quality of teaching and learning at school, I want to check how do they do this, because if students are not happy with a particular teacher or particular teachers that are teaching them that they do not hear, and then they continue reporting to the principal, where does ERFC come in? How do you help those students? Where else can they go? Because if they don't get help from the principal, that's basically what I was saying. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I hear the response on the Eastern Cape, and I have read the collective agreement. What is happening in practice is very different. Posts have been manufactured to accommodate excess teachers at the expense of other posts. I was at a school the other day where an Afrikaans primary school where they cannot fill a grade 2 post because that post has been allocated to an African language teacher who hasn't arrived at the school. They don't know where she is, if she'll ever arrive. There isn't a curriculum for her to teach. So what's happening on the ground, and she's one of very many, what's happening on the ground is very far, as I say, from achieving that goal number one. I'm interested in your interest in ECD.
I'm not a government.
Yes.
Can you go back to what you have said? You said posts are being manufactured. Can you give another? What is this? Put us all in a clearer picture.
Well, the title of the post, or the description of the post, so the school is allocated to take 12 posts, which would be its normal post basket for the year, which would include its normal, in this case, let's use the Lincoln Primary School in Kraaifontein, would include the grade 2 Afrikaans teacher that is, or the grade 2 teacher that needs it, an Afrikaans primary school. The post is vacant, but they've not been allocated. They've been told they have to have, and every single school that does not teach African languages has to have an African language teacher in the Eastern Cape. Those African language teachers are being drawn from the excess pool, and they are not additional posts. They are part of the core post basket. So that grade, I mean, that's just an example, that grade 2 post cannot be filled because there is now a grade 1 and a grade 8 African language teacher at every single school that doesn't teach African languages in the Eastern Cape. And it's a very difficult issue because, believe me, I'm all for teaching African language. I can't speak one. I wish I'd learned one when I was at school. I can't speak one, but not at the expense of the core curriculum. So, nevertheless, I will follow up on that. It's not in the collective agreement, but something has happened in between. Something has happened in between. I don't know if it's an ELRC agreement. Something has happened. And the minister has, she's given me a response to a written question, which certainly confirms what my suspicions were. But, Chairperson, with respect to ECD and Grey R, my question is simply, is it on the table? You say that your research interest lies with ECD and Grade R and the practitioners upgrading the conditions of service, etc., of current practitioners. Is it actually on the table? If so, who brought it to the table? I'm interested in the media, because quite frankly, I would react very negatively if I were at the airport or somewhere and I saw an advert for, or I was looking at television, an advert for ELRC, because why do people need to know? I don't understand that. I don't understand that expenditure. It's not as if you're selling a product. You only deal with educated labor relations issues. You're not selling the product to the public. So why do you have to put your media out there?
And then I'm lastly, and I know we asked this question last time, last year as well, and that's your support for the QLTC. I don't understand the necessity for ERRC to be involved in that. What is the level of involvement, the type of involvement, and your support for the NECT? Is it just, is it support in spirit that you like the idea, or is it concrete, substantive support, and what form does it take? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
One question on the issue of the retention strategy. What retention strategy is the department actually having on teachers mostly in rural areas?
Thank you so much. DG, I think that there is a question that you also need to get into. So as with this one, around the issues of African language teachers that are there at schools but are not teachers. I'm not sure whether you also understand. I would love you to also come in when it comes to that one. If not, we'll all have that agreement that that is an issue that needs to be followed, and we have to make a follow-up and get what is it exactly that is happening if ever the case is like that. We would really love to have an explanation even from the side of the department.
I can't allow you to be rude, Honorable Member. You can never be allowed to be rude. Yeah, you can say you're rude.
I'll be nice. for interrupting and coming in after you, I'm rude. Just what is the exact percentage, my first round of questions, on your employees? I ask for the percentage or the amount on your budget of your staff.
The CFO will deal with the issue. The honourable member has in fact dealt, I think, sufficiently with the issue of the QLTC. We provide financial support to the program. However, I must indicate that we have noted that there is some a duplication in functions with the NECT, and we are currently engaged in a discussion of how best do we then ensure that there's value in the financial support that we give, and whether indeed there is, or is it just a perception that there's a duplication in both. We currently just have a support. We do not have any financial resources that we're offering the NECT, but we support their programs because they do improve the quality of education in public schools. But they've got their own programs, they do their own thing, and as I indicated in QLTC, we assist them with funds. The issue in Rappelnet is certainly an issue that we are not aware of. The part that I can indicate is that once parties sign a collective agreement, then let's go back to the issue of the transfer of educators. We then step off. There are two issues. There are two forms of dispute that can be referred to us in relation to those particular collective agreements. The one is we have a responsibility to monitor the implementation thereof, and that is done through the Office of the General Secretary. And where one of the parties is not complying with the collective agreement, it then gets referred to us as a dispute, and we will then enforce the provisions of the collective agreement. The other dispute, which is the second one, is what we call an interpretation application of the collective agreement. And that's where parties don't agree on how it should be implemented and or applied. And we would then step in and clarify it. But we don't get involved in the modalities. So we would not take educator X from school Y and place them in school B. That's the department's prerogative once the agreement has been signed. In relation to the QMS Chair, I'm advised that the department and one of the unions have signed. We are currently waiting the signature of the second union, which we should receive soon. Our apologies that the process is taking a bit longer. I think sometimes once the in principle agreement, we tend to remove the foot from the pedal, because we know that the contract has come into effect, because it's recorded as such. It's just the formality of signing which is required. But certainly we apologize, and we will ensure that everybody has appended their signature to the collective agreement.
Sorry, may I just clarify what was just said? The contract has come into effect. It can't have been. It hasn't been signed by all parties.
Ma'am, the mines are at heart either, and that means that the parties have agreed on the issue. I would not want to enter into a legal debate. Safe to say that once it is recorded in council that there's an agreement, the circulation and the signing is a formality to confirm the agreement. But it's really a legal, as far as council is concerned, there's agreement. Let me put it that way.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. The issue of the progress on the building, we have a contractor on site. Contractors started their duties on the 26th of January. Our expectation, or as per contract, the expected completion date is 10 months after the site handover. We are currently, from the reports that we have from the contractor, we have been told that might be earlier than the 10 months, which is expected to be November, end of November this year. So we might complete the contract earlier than that period. The other issue, Chair, that was raised was on the media advert, wherein part of what we really have a small communication unit in our organization, but it is intended for internal but also for external communication. And ours is not to advertise, but to create awareness of the services of the ELRC and what role it plays in the public sector, in the public education sector. So that's really what we have there. On the issue of the salaries and the percentage of the salaries, I do not have the actual figures with me. However, 21 million has been budgeted for the budget for the compensation of employees, and as a service organization, we do have a staff complement to that effect to service our parties. This makes between 20% and 23% of the total budget for the next financial year, which is 2015-16. Thank you, Chair.
So on the issue of the two issues, the incentives, the minister is currently reviewing the policy which deals with the incentives for educators. And in relation to the retention of educators, that's really the prerogative of the department. It's not an issue that has been tabled before us. In the event that parties want to, raise it, then it will come to us. And in relation to the incentives, once the policy has been reviewed, if it deals with conditions of service, then obviously it will be tabled before the ELRC for negotiations. But the minister has the prerogative to review such. Thank you.
Sorry, I was just reminding about my question about the ECD and grade R, whether it's on the table and is being negotiated.
Yes, you. We had an address from the Planning Commission around issues relating to ECD and grade R. The Planning Commission came to us, and what we then decided And one of the, what the Planning Commission advised us was that the Department of Social Development is also researching issues in, that relate to ECD. We then decided to establish a task team, which is what I had indicated before, to look at one, whether the scope of the ELRC should be extended to cover educators in ECD, but to also look at the broad spectrum of issues relating to ECD. So that task team was established. What that task team has come back and said to us, remember the task team would be made up of the parties, so you'd have members from the Department of Basic Education and members from Labour. The task team has come back to say we need to appoint a researcher and draft the terms of reference, you know, for this research, because the resources, you know, the time mostly, you know, that we have wouldn't be as well as skills. So yes, in that respect, the issue is before us. We are in a process of securing the services of a competent researcher to look into the issues that will be identified in the terms of reference and give us feedback. And once we have that, I mean, we'll gladly convey it. Thanks, ma'am.
Thank you so much, honorable members. Thank you, Chairperson of the ELRC and CFO and the whole delegation for the deliberations that we have just had. You know, honorable members, I'm very interested in the issue of building. I think it's not for the first encounter that we have such a hot debate on the issue of building. I'm reminded when we had this one with SAFE and when we had to sit down and calculate the wasteful expenditure when it when SAFE was encountering the same problem, renting and what not. And that's when you said, say, just go back, make sure that you get your own building quickly as you can, as fast as you can, so that we're done with the issue of building and we know that you're comfortable and working. So I think we need to go back to that even with you, ELRC. I'm happy you said in 10 months' time or even less than that, we'll be done with this issue of building. We know that you are comfortable, you're working well, so that we don't come back and go back to the issue of your establishment of the building again. Let's hope you are going to stick on that. Issue of QMS, I know members have raised concerns. We are hopefully, again, as to say, when we come back, everyone will have signed, as we have said, we have started with it. Let's see it happening, and we hope we'll see a move again when it comes to that. I know there are a lot of questions that our members can come up with, or they still want to close to ELRC, but I know, unfortunately, we have to stop there. We go to emergency, but surely before you are delisted, we'll still have a chance. Even after your delisting, we'll still have that opportunity, and we'll still have a mandate to call you back to account on some of the things that you did not finish today. So it's not the last time that we see you. Other than that, DG, on the issue of educators, the issue of that has been raised by Honorable Lovma in the Eastern Cape, I know you'll have to get into that one because you are the one that will be making a follow-up on it, and we'll get a clear report what is happening. Thank you very much, ELRC. Really, we need to comment on the issue of peace labor markets that we have seen, as I said, when you open, and we wish to see your entity going forward to make sure that you promote a labor peace as we have seen. Thank you so much. We'll be left behind as a committee. We'll look at our minutes and the discussions that we have because we're also preparing for our budget vote debate. These are some of the things that we'll be looking at and see what is it that you do as we move forward with this process. Thank you so much. Then we get to Umadusi. Okay. I'm not sure who's going to do the presentation of knowledge, but I know that the chairperson of LRC wanted to say something as his closing remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the honourable members. One of the issues we spoke about, and I'm glad the acting DG is here, when we were talking about delisting, and myself and the General Secretary had a meeting with him, we indicated that we subscribe to the principle of accountability. And that we are not delisting to run away from accountability, not at all. But having said that, it's important to note that we are in a process of being delisted, and EXCO has deliberated on the matter, and taken that decision to comply with the provisions of the Labour Relations Act as from the 1st of April 2015. Otherwise, we run the risk of being deregistered, this side. But thank you. We have, I don't know if enjoy is the correct word, but have enjoyed coming here and explaining our processes. We've certainly given the best explanation that we have. We have nothing to hide. And thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you to all the honorable members.
All the best.